much for the invitation to speak here. So yes, I'm going to tell you about relatives of three-dimensional gauge theories, and it's based on some work with Svi Yin and with Ranabe Gayoto. Okay, so this is my general outline. I'll sort of give you some motivation. I'll tell you how I'm going to obtain these three-dimensional gauge theories from systems involving D3 brain and 5 brains. And this will sort of connect in with some of the stuff that Ranabe was talking about. And then I'll tell you something about some interesting operators in these theories, some monopole operators. And there'll be an interesting application to n equals 4 U1 gauge theory with some hypermultiple. So my motivation is, well, so on the physics side, there's some renewed interest in three-dimensional gauge theories, especially transcendence matter theories, because now we know some gravity duals of those theories. And then there's an interesting interplay between dualities of the four-dimensional gauge theory and the three-dimensional cousins, and this is by some kind of dimensional reduction, either on an interval or a circle. And we'll find a sort of new description of n equals 4 QED with flavors, different from the usual three-dimensional mirror. It'll also tell you something about these monopole operators. So one way to construct some interesting three-dimensional theories is to start with n equals 4 superiorly nils in 4 dimensions and put it on a circle or on an interval. And some people have talked about this in previous talks in the past few days. And so there's some, if it's on an interval, there'll be some boundary conditions. And in either case, I'll also imagine putting in some additional domain walls along one of the directions. And in the Abelian theory, we heard that the Dirichlet boundary conditions look like a D3 brain ending on a D5, and Neumann boundary conditions look like a D3 brain ending on an NS5 brain. And if I'm on a circle or an interval, then at long distances, it basically looks like a 2+1 dimensional theory, a three-dimensional theory. So this is how I'll obtain my 3D theories. So this has been done for a long time. So the way that people could obtain the n equals 4 theory in 3 dimensions with hypermultiplet flavors from this sort of construction is like this. So this looks much like pictures we saw, although I think I have a 90-degree rotation between my NS5 brains and D5 brains relative to some other thoughts. But anyway, so I can consider a D3 brain stretched between a pair of parallel NS5 brains. And this boundary condition of the D3 ending on the NS5 breaks half the supersymmetry so that in the effective 2+1 dimensions, which I'm not drawing, so this is one direction of the four-dimensional world volume, the other three I'm not depicting. But in those three dimensions, I'll have n equals 4 supersymmetry, half of the number of supercharges of the original four-dimensional theory. And then I also intersect with some number, say nf d5 brands, which are at right angles to these ns5 brands. And that will give you nf hypermultiplets, which are charged under the U1 theory living on this D3. So this theory is an interesting three-dimensional theory, and if you have only one hypermultiplet, then in the infrared, it's not too interesting. There's no Higgs branch, and you just get some free theory. But otherwise, there's some strongly coupled fixed point, which is located at the intersection of Higgs and Coulomb branches. So there's some Coulomb branch, which is parameterized by the vector multiplet of this U1, and Higgs branch, which is parameterized by these hypermultiplets that you have here, which are massless in the conformal theory. Okay, so what's the moduli space look like? So naively, the Coulomb branch would just be C2, parameterized by that vector multiplet. But there's some quantum correction that modifies it to C2 mod ZNF. And the Higgs branch can't be corrected in the n equals 4 theory. One argument is that you promote the gauge coupling to some component of a vector superfield. It decouples from the hypermultiplet because of this amount of supersymmetry. And so you just get this classical result, which you could find by just solving supersymmetry equations for those hypermultiplets. Okay, so far, I'm just looking at a case where the type 2B coupling or the tau of the n equals 4 theory in 4 dimensions is purely imaginary, so I didn't have a theta angle. But if I apply some more general SL2Z transformation, so not just S duality, which you'd invert J nils, but something else, then you can see, say, from this configuration with NS5 and D5, that I'm going to show you, that For instance, there's one guy that needs the NS5 the same and changes the D5 to a 1-1-5,
right?
And in general, a different subgroup of the supersymmetry will be unbroken, but of course, since I just got it from an S duality in three dimensions, I still have the same supersymmetry. I just can't have all these links simultaneously. If I tried to have them all at once, which is kind of natural from the three-dimensional point of view, you'd end up with n=3 supersymmetric theories and 2+1 dimensions. But in this talk, I'll have only n=4. Okay, and so in an earlier paper of Gayot and Witten, they analyzed this situation, and they found that for, say, an NS5 brain and a 1K5 brain to preserve the same subset of the same n=4 three-dimension subset of the n=4 and 4 dimensions, you need to take this coupling to be some special value where phi is an arbitrary parameter. And so in particular, you see that this tau can't become arbitrarily large, so you can't really take the Yang-Yule's coupling to be very weak. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to preserve this one supersymmetry. And they worked out what, for instance, the boundary conditions corresponding to the NS5 brain or this 1K5 brain are when you have this theta turned on. And you find some results like this. So if it, sorry, what's the question? Oh, did I call it theta? Wow, that's weird. I'm sorry. Well, theta, I think, is this. Yeah, sure. I mean, this tau I would expect is also plus theta over 2 pi. So when I expand this out, I get some theta. Okay, so in this kind of configuration, you end up with Chern-Simons terms in the three-dimensional theory. And this was first done by some of these people. They had some argument which relied more on n=3 supersymmetry. So in their configuration, they didn't choose this special value of tau, so that these guys broke different n=4 subsets. So the total broken was down to n=3. But then they were able to take the weakly coupled theory and derive it. But there's some argument, this is also due to Gayot and Witten, that so if you imagine the D3 brain ending on an NS5 brain, and you turned on the theta angle, then you have this kind of theta term in the four-dimensional theory. And if you integrate by parts on the boundary, it looks like a Chern-Simons term of level plus theta, or on the other boundary, minus theta. On the other hand, if I had a D3 brain with theta equals 0, ending on a 1K5 brain, I could perform an SL2 Z duality to turn this into an NS5 brain, and that expensive turning on this theta. So therefore, if the D3 brain ends on a 1K5 brain, I basically get the Chern-Simons term at level K. And so if it's stretched between this type and that type, there'll be a relative level K Chern-Simons set. So in the three-dimensional theory, I'll get some Chern-Simons coupling. And just to let you know what this Chern-Simons thing I'm talking about is, first I'll tell you, so this first part of the Chern-Simons action is the bosonic Chern-Simons theory at level K. And you can make this thing into an n=2 supersymmetric theory in two dimensions. So what you'll have is the full vector multiplet, also including these massive degenos and some auxiliary fields, and also some chiral multiplets of matter in various representations. And so you have, in addition to this Chern-Simons term, you could imagine a Yang-Yule's term for the vector multiplet. We won't really be interested in that. And there are also some kinetic terms for the chiral multiplet, which includes some couplings to this field sigma, and there's the usual D term. Yeah, sure. Yeah, D is not a derivative, it's a field. It's like the D field, yeah, sure. So if you integrate out these fields and the Gaugino, you end up with an expression like this. This is slightly formal, so the I index runs over the gauge group, the A index runs over the matter representation, and this matrix T tells you how the ith element of the gauge group acts on the eighth element of the matter representation. And so you see you get this sextic bosonic potential, which is classically marginal. So these theories are kind of nice from a physical point of view. They're some conformally invariant field theories in three dimensions. And you can argue that they don't renormalize, basically because there are no other terms that the renormalization group could generate. Yeah, I believe these guys did that in some example. Oh, sorry, yes? so this is just supposed to be in n equals 2 chance Simon's matter theory. Most generic matter, but no superpotential. No n equals 2 superpotential. So this thing is fixed by the supersymmetry, basically. Okay, so in this talk, I'm really going to have n equals 4 theories, but they fall into this general classification of n equals 3 chance Simon's matter theories, which are totally rigid theories. So you could start, say, with n equals 4 Yang-Mills coupled to matter in 3 dimensions. So that's the kind of theory that we'll later be talking about, like the n equals 4 QED. These are the 3-dimensional theories that you get by reducing the n equals 4 Yang-Mills in 4 dimensions with FBPS domain walls or boundary conditions. And then if you add to that a trans-Simon theorem in general, you'll break to n equals 3. And the way you achieve that is you add some chiral multiplet, and once you eliminate the Yang-Mills term, then that chiral multiplet would have no kinetic term, and this lives in the adjoint representation. And then you want to, so this is just coming because I want to have n equals 4 Yang-Mills matter. And also, the chiral multiplet should come in pairs, so they should be hypermultiplets for this n equals 4. And then when I add the trans-Simons term and throw away the Yang-Mills term, I'll throw the kinetic term of this phi away, and I'll introduce some superpotential, just from the supersymmetrization of the trans-Simons term. And you can integrate that guy out, and you get exactly the same action as before, except you'll have some n equals 2 superpotential of this form. And again, it's completely determined in terms of the trans-Simons level. So I think of the trans-Simons level as a pairing, basically, on the Lie algebra. So this is from the term, you know, K A wedge F expanded in those coordinates. And I think I've switched between I and A B for some reason in this expression. Okay, so these n equals 3 theories are totally rigid, in the sense that there just are no operators that are marginal or relevant that you can add to them that preserves all of that supersymmetry. So they have to be superconformal, and you can actually check that the level doesn't renormalize at one move. And if I have the Yang-Mills term, it's impossible to have more supersymmetry, but without the Yang-Mills term, in many particular cases, you can have more. So some of those were classified to the n equals 4 case. These certain n equals 4 theories were classified by Guyot and Witten and other people later on. Okay, so let me give you a simple example of this. This is actually a guy with n equals 4 supersymmetry that will be relevant for the rest of this talk. So I start with the U1 cross U1 trans-Simons theory, which has an off-diagonal kind of trans-Simons coupling. So this one. So A is the gauge field here, and B is the gauge field here. Okay, and then I just take a pair of matter hypermultiplets, one in the fundamental of this, and one in the fundamental of that. And you can check that this theory actually has n equals 4 supersymmetry. So for the n equals 3 case, I was just told you the definition of these hypermultiplets, say the bosonic component of the X is going to be sitting in a 2-1 representation of the SU2R symmetry, the SO3R symmetry. In order to get an enhancement to n equals 4, you want to have that you can independently act with SU2 on both the bosons and the fermions in this multiplet. And here I have these two hypers in the n equals 4 sense. One becomes a twisted hyper, meaning that its bosonic component transforms into two of the other SU2. So for n equals 4 supersymmetry, the R symmetry is SO4, which is SU2 cross SU2. So that's the two SU2s I'm talking about. And the general machine that I just described tells you that the superpotential of this theory is of this simple form. And this is just a general remark. So if you write down one of these trans-Simons theories, including Yang-Mills, like as I was defining them before, and you flow to the infrared, the trans-Simons terms dominate at long distances. The Yang-Mills coupling diverges, and so you just erase its kinetic term. But the Lagrangian stays non-singular. So you get to write down some nice Lagrangian for the fixed form. And morally, this is due to the fact that in these constructions, I had started with the conformal theory in 3 plus 1 dimensions, and I put in boundary conditions that are themselves conformally invariant. Okay, so now I'm going to tell you... Yeah, that's true. But right. So what, of course, the theory, when I compactify, if I think of that thing as a 3 plus 1 theory on an interval or a circle, is of course not conformal. But what I mean is that the scale transformation in the 3 plus 1 dimension could be traded with just the scaling of that circle, because the pair theory is conformal. And the scaling of that circle just scales the Yang-Mills coupling and doesn't change anything else. Just shrinking to zero, and that just scaling the Yang-Mills coupling to infinity and erasing the kinetic map. And all the other pieces are unchanged in this nature. Okay, so we've heard before about the way that the S-duality of this type 2B configuration, of the one I showed you before, with here two D5 grams, basically turns into, in the three-dimensional theory, the mirror symmetry of the three-dimensional theory. So here I'm going to use a slightly different SL2Z transformation. So I'm going to turn the 2D5 grams into 1-1-5 grams. So that's why I had to go through that description of what happens when I turn on the theta parameter. So if the number of flavors is less than 4, so if I have less than 4 of these guys, I can move them to the left and right so that I alternate between 1-1-5 grams and NS5 grams. So the reason why I want to do this is because if I just tell you about n equals 4 QED with some flavors, that's a perfectly nice Lagrangian, but it doesn't tell you that much in the sense about what the infrared theory looks like. In particular, it just has some Yang-Mills coupling or some QED couplings, in fact. And if you try to run those values to infinity in the QED with flavors itself, you would end up with some singular Lagrangian. I mean, you wouldn't have any terms for the gauge field other than its coupling to the Matamor. So the theory wouldn't make sense. So the degrees of freedom in the infrared of QED with NF flavors are different than the ones in the UV in some significant way. But once I introduce these Stern-Simons terms for every gauge group, then I have a much better control, as I just described. So for instance, in a case when I have two D5 grams, when I pull this one to the right, I end up with this simple Stern-Simons matter theory. And there are some matter fields also in this game. So every time I have a domain wall that looks either like an NS5 ring or similarly a 1-1-5 ring, there are hypermultiplets that are in the bifundamental of the gauge group associated to this broken piece and this broken piece. So that's basically the same as what Davide was telling us the other day in the case when all of these were NS5 rings. So replacing this with 1-1-5 ring really does nothing. It just introduces these Stern-Simons terms. The notation means that this is the guy at level 1, this is the guy at level minus 1. So in that theory, the overall U1 acts trivially. So there's some U1 that just acts trivially on all of the matter fields. And so I can integrate that guy out. And there's no problem doing that. That guy actually has a self-Stern-Simons term in this model. So in particular, I can't form any monopoles for that. So there's no trouble to integrate it out. And when I do that, I end up exactly with this simple example that I told you before, where the X fields come from these bifundamentals and the Ys from these. Okay, and in general, I could take the same theory that U1 cross U1 with the off-diagonal Stern-Simons coupling and just take still one of the fields of the type Y, but an F minus one of the type X. And that gives me superpotential of this form, very similar. And if I started with three flavors and did this kind of trick and integrated out the overall guy, I would also end up with that theory for the NF equals three case. For NF equals four or more, then I can't rearrange them in this simple way. So these some other trick. And you'll notice that this thing is very similar, or generates a very similar answer to doing sort of piecewise mirror symmetry, which is something that Capusso and Strassel studied, and also Davide talked about. So if you cut imagine you cut this D3 grain. So this only works in the abelian case. So I cut it into two halves. I called the gauge field on this half A tilde, and this side was still A. And I just glued them back together again with this coupling along the boundary. So I've done nothing. Oh, the L is going to come in a minute. So first I just cut here along this, you can't see too well, but this is a dotted black line there. which has become invisible on the projection. So I cut here, and then I glue back together with this kind of term, so I've just done nothing. Okay, now note that the theory on the right, where I put just one of the hypermultiplets, is this self-mirror boundary condition. So what I do is I take the dual on that side, and not this side, and that has the effect of, in the abelian case, just replacing, you know, a tilde wedge star FA with a tilde wedge FAL, the dual A here. But the rest of this gadget stays the same because it's self-mirrored, so I still have one hyper charged under this AL, and I have NF minus one charged under this side. So that's exactly this thing I just told you about, and the BF, like Transinus term, now just comes from this boundary gluing. So you see, you get to the same thing sort of in two different ones. Now, that's an unfortunate timing. So, let's see. So, okay, so, but this theory here, this BF-like theory, looks like naively has a very different moduli space than the moduli space of QED with NF flavor. So can we see that they're really the same theory? And this will lead us to an understanding of certain interesting kind of monopole operators in these three-dimensional theories. So normally, right, so in particular, it's going to be important to take into account a certain kind of quantum correction. So normally, in Yang-Mills theory, with eight supercharges in 2 plus 1 dimensions, the moduli space of hypermultiplets is not corrective, as I said before, because you can promote the coupling to a vector superfield or a component of a vector superfield, and that will decouple from the hypermultiple. But, so you might think that this applies also to the moduli spaces here. So note that once I have these BF-type couplings and I throw away the Yang-Mills terms, I really don't have a Coulomb branch anymore. The gauge field is non-dynamical, and so on. And so I'm going to have some branches of the moduli space parameterized by these fields Y or the field X. So you can see clearly in the superpotential, if Ys are set to zero, there's no constraint on the Xs, and likewise, if Xs are set to zero, there's no constraint on the Ys. Those are going to give me the two branches. But right now, they just sound like a branch that looks like C2 and a branch that looks like C2 NF minus 1, which is not what we had before, so something seems like it's not working. But it turns out that in these Transinus matter theories, it's not true that you can't quantum correct the moduli space of hypermultiples. So both of those moduli spaces are parameterized by hypermultiples. The theory is n equals 4 supersymmetry with 2 plus 1 dimensions, but they still can get a quantum correction. And I'll actually show you a correction of this kind. The Transinus level is quantized. No, the level won't get quantum corrected. I mean that the moduli space, I mean, the moduli space gets a quantum correction, which depends on the level. I mean, okay, because it's kind of discrete, and you might think that if you take the level to be very large, then that's like the weakly coupled Transinus theory. So you would say, maybe there you have the classical answer, and then you'll get some quantum correction in a perturbative expansion in K. But because the discreteness of K, you'll see that the quantum corrected moduli space will sort of involve like some quotient by k plus 1. So in a sense, that goes away when k is very large, but OK. You'll see what I mean in a moment. The metric gets corrected, but it's a different quotient. I mean, instead of being, say, C2 mod ZK, it will be C2 mod ZK plus 1 or something like that. So you change the structure of the singularity. I mean, right, all of these moduli spaces are hyperkalar, so you sort of either correct them by a lot or you don't correct them at all. Okay, so in these theories, there are some monopole operators that will play an important role in what I'm going to say. So you could think of just the magnetic monopole in the four-dimensional theory, and if you reduce the three dimensions in one way, it looks like some vortex configuration. On the other hand, if I sort of align the magnetic monopole along the time direction, then it would look like a magnetic instanton in three dimensions, where I have a non-trivial integral of F around some sphere. But the three-dimensional theory is a CFT, so I have a state operator correspondence. So the operator that creates this vortex corresponds by the state operator correspondence to, in radial quantization, the state associated to that background. Yeah, when I'm saying this, I'm thinking in three. Yeah, exactly. That's right, precisely. But because of the state operator correspondence, I could sort of relate. I relate these two pictures. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So, as I said already, in the transiting series, there's no Coulomb branch, because the vector multiples are essentially massive. And of course, n equals 3, or in this case, we even have n equals 4 supersymmetry, is going to project the dimensions of the ordinary chiral operators that I form out of matter fields. So in the chiral ring, I won't correct those guys. But because I have these monopole operators around, this is how quantum corrections will enter again. And there's actually a rich structure of branches of the moduli space of these guys, which are distinguished by the spectrum of a Lowell monopole. So in particular here, we see we have two different branches, even though there's no Coulomb and Higgs branch. There's sort of all Higgs branches, but different. Okay, so I told you before, I have this super potential. And now I'm going to have two branches. One parameter is by x and one by y. And in the guy where the x's are set to 0, the u1 under which the y's are neutral and the x's are charged, which has the gauge field A, is going to be unbroken. And likewise, on the other branch, where the where the y's are set to 0, the u1b will be unbroken. Now, naively, you might think that you should quotient by the constant gauge transformations in the non-trivially acting u1. So on this space, by the u1b, and here by the u1a, but that would give you some three-dimensional moduli space, so it's clear that's not right. But I have this Trans-Simons term, and so if I have these kind of monopole operators with a non-trivial integral of f over some sphere, if I did a constant gauge transformation on the other guy, this term will only be invariant if the gauge transformation lives in some ZK subgroup. So sort of classically, you expect these moduli spaces to be C2 mod ZK instead of just C2 or some three-dimensional thing. But on the other hand, at the origin, you have two branches intersecting, and so some fields which were previously massive on the moduli space become massless. So in particular, if I look at this moduli space MA, which is parameterized by the y's, the x fields have a mass that looks like this, which clearly goes to 0 when at the origin of this space. So these guys are some hypermultiplets, so it's natural to write the hyperkähler triplet of massless. And the quantum correction physically comes from integrating out these massive fields, and it will change the singularity at the origin where they become massless. Okay, so just to explain further that ZK, if you forget about this X tilde multiply, then when you go onto the moduli space by turning on the Y's, you give a mass to the broken gauge field B. And when you integrate that out, it actually turns out that it gives the Niels kinetic terms, which was discovered by Wookie and Papageorgicus, to the unbroken gauge field A. So then you can dualize that guy to a scalar, which transforms under shifts, under the U1B, which was broken, in the same way as the phase of the hypermultiplet Y. But this guy has a charge K relative to this guy. So if you gauge fix by setting this dual scalar to 0, you'll have left the ZK subgroup. So that's the same ZK I just told you about. Okay, now, how can you compute the correction to the hyperkähler metric? So this is sort of a brute force calculation, which I won't go through in detail, but just to show you that it can be done. I can integrate out the massive hypermultiplets at one loop, and I'll get some correction to the action of this form. So here I'm integrating out the guy's x, the hypermultiplet x, and this m is that mass of the x that I previously defined. It's a function of the fields, the vevs of y and y tilde on the moduli space. And this guy, I just can rewrite this expression in some simpler way here. So this omega is basically the vector, it's the vector potential of a Dirac monopole over the three-dimensional space parameterized by the three-dimensional vector M. This is just some easy way to rewrite it. And this thing actually is already introducing a Yang-Mills term for the gauge field A, but that won't be terribly important because we have the other effect anyway. So before you integrate out the broken gauge field B, like I said you could do just a moment ago, you can already dualize A. So you just treat FA as the fundamental variable, and because we're on the branch of the moduli space where the U1A is unbroken, nothing is charged under it, so there's no problem in doing that. But you do have the Chern-Simons term, so you have this FA tilde, so I'm renaming the field series FA tilde because I'm considering that as a basic variable, coupled to the field B, this is the Chern-Simons term. And then the quantum correction gives me these two terms and this. So now I integrate out this guy the way I would like to do, and I'm left with this kind of action. And so the main new feature is that I have this term here. And the gauge transformation, the B-type gauge transformation, which acts on these fields, you know, rotates the hypermultiple at Y because it's in the fundamental of that, because X is gauge transformation on the gauge field. And in order for this thing to be gauge invariant, you can see that this dual variable phi Y, which is the Lagrange multiplier I have to introduce here to dualize, is transformed up to shifts with charge K. So I have this space consisting of Y and Y tilde, that's four real dimensions, and also this phi Y, so five real dimensions, but the metric is non-trivial because of this term here. And so when I quotient, by this guy, I again try to gauge fix by setting phi Y to zero, that's fine, but I have a different metric now on the space. And so I get, instead of C2 mod ZK, C2 mod ZK plus one. And in general, if I had integrated out NF guys, I would have an NF here, and I get ZK plus K plus NF. So it looks very simple in this case because I have just a four real dimensional moduli space. It only can change the singularity at a point. In higher dimensions, I could have more complicated changes of the moduli space, but it follows the same pattern. But let me tell you this thing in a slightly different way. So you can also just look at the chiral ring, which basically is functions on this moduli space. So there are some monopole operators in the Chern-Simons matter theory. So in the Yang-Mills Chern-Simons matter theory, you can imagine constructing these monopole operators in a simple way, and then you flow to the infrared, and they remain there. And so as I told you before, in radio quantization, it's basically the operator dual to a state which I construct from some classical background with non-zero magnetic flux, in this case to the gauge field FA, the field strength FA. And to support this guy, you actually have to turn on the scalar sigma that I defined in the beginning. This is one of the guys in the vector multiple. So here I still have the Yang-Mills term, so I'll still talk about it. Once I flow to the Chern-Simons theory, then I mean, this field sigma just gets set equal to a particular combination in terms of the matter field. The reason why I have to turn in this constant scalar is because in flat, if I wasn't doing radio quantization, just looking at the ordinary theory, I would have to have some pole in the, I would have some singularity in the gauge potential, and in order to solve the equations of motion, I have to have an associated singularity for this matter, I mean, this field sigma. But when I go to radio quantization, because this thing has an untrivial conformal dimension, I'll change to just this constant x. And in order for this to make sense, it's very important that this field y, out of which I construct sigma, is not charged under the gauge group U1A. Otherwise, this would somehow be inconsistent. So I call this operator T. And in these things, this, I'm sort of following the work of Kapustin and Borokov and Wu in this. Although they didn't really talk about exactly all of these ingredients together, but different ones are putting them together. Okay, so the Chern-Simons term tells you that this operator T actually is charged under some of the gauge groups. So if I write the Chern-Simons term like that, in this background where FA is turned on, I integrate by parts, and I find that I have this kind of integral, which just looks like a particle of charge NK. Equivalently, in radio quantization, the Gauss law constraint is modified because I have this Chern-Simons term, and so I have to turn on some, you know, S waves of the matter field. But again, it's important that the matter fields I'll use to make a gauge invariant combination with this operator are ones which are neutral under the magnetic flux that T is associated with, so neutral under the gauge field A. And so if I just think of the operator undressed, so just this guy with the non-trivial charge because of the Chern-Simons term, then I basically, the Chern-Simons terms don't do anything, and I can just use the calculation done by these guys, where n equals 4, Yang-Mills matter theories. And I calculate the dimension of this model. I mean, so they basically calculated the dimension of this monopole operator, and you get some contributions from the hypermultiplet and negative contributions from the vector. So these little QIs are supposed to be the charge of that field under the magnetic U1 that I'm turning off. And of course, if I form a gauge invariant combination, I'll also include whatever scalar fields I use to do that. So those will obviously also contribute. Okay, I won't go through the details of how they derive that and what someone asked me. But anyway, the... Right, so... Okay, in general, there's sort of a nice picture. So the equations, so this is slightly an aside for what I'm going to say after this. But in general, for an N equals feature in Simon's matter theory, the... get cut off here. But the equations that define the moduli space say that this combination is equal to zero. So here the Qs are the matter fields. This this capital A index is the SU2R symmetry index. This B just parameterizes the matter representations. The IJ are the gauge indices. And these mu's are the ordinary hyperkähler moment maps, which are defined like this. This gamma is just the thing that combines the two twos of SU2 to make the three, because the moment mass is the three of the SFVR symmetry. Okay, so from this equation, this equals to zero, you see that the subgroup of the gauge group generated by K inverse mu acts trivially on the matter field. So in particular, it's unbroken. So if I'm on some branch of the moduli space where, say, these mu's are non-zero, then I'll have some unbroken piece of the gauge group. Of course, there might be some branch from mu that's zero, and then this is vacuum. Moreover, putting this definition of mu into this equation, you find that K inverse mu times K inverse mu times K, which is the same as this, is equal to zero, so that this direction in the gauge group is null in the Chern-Simons form. So in other words, the U1, let's say, that I'm turning on the magnetic flux for has no self-Chern-Simons. So those are exactly the conditions that allow me to form a monopole operator with that flux. Moreover, the Chern-Simons term is not invariant under the constant gauge transformations in the background of this kind of monopole, as I explained before. And you can see which guys I should quotient by looking at the phase of the Chern-Simons action. So in this fixed background, this fixed monopole background, then the phase of the Chern-Simons action is a map from the gauge group to U1. So I fix this background, but I can still make some gauge transformations that will change this action because of this fact. And that defines the map from G to U1, and I'm only supposed to quotient by the kernel of that map. I say it this way because in general there's some discrete group component. Otherwise, I would talk about the algebra. Okay, so in the example I was telling you about, you have these monopole operators. This on the branch MA and that on the branch MB. So this is the guy with one unit of magnetic flux for the U1A, that's for the U1B, so on. And use one hypermultiplet charged under U1A and one under U1B, and they both contribute to the dimensions of these operators as I just described. So they both have dimension 1/2. So here, an ordinary hypermultiplet is dimension 1/2. Boson is dimension 1/2. Yeah. Well, yeah, so all these guys live in the same theory. I mean, what I mean by that is that if I take the OPA of this guy with one of the fields X, which parameterized this branch, in the moduli space, I'll get zero because there won't be any guys that appear in the chiral ring in that combination. But of course, those are all operators in the same theory. But so if this Chern-Simons theory with this VF type coupling at level K tells me that the induced charge of Ta is K under the other U1, so it has a magnetic flux of 1 in this gauge group, that off diagonal Chern-Simons theorem gives it a charge K under that guy, and vice versa. And so, for instance, the chiral operators that are associated to that branch of the moduli space, in the sense that I just said, I can construct in this way. So I want to form some gauge invariant combination. And this is what's expected for C2 mod ZK plus 1, because I have this t here, which contributes to dimension 1/2 to this guy. So it's as if I had a z1 and z2, and I formed these invariant polynomials. Okay, so that matches what I said before. Why does teach us? I'm like, why? Under which group? That's right. So the reason why this T is charged under, so the TA is charged under the second U1, in the same way that Y is charged under the second U1. Well, except it has charge K instead of charge 1. But oh, not about the gauge group. You mean under the R symmetry, or right. So I didn't tell you in detail, but in the way that I define this monopole operator, instead of using that field sigma, I could have used any combination of sigma and what I called curly phi at the beginning. So in other words, in the n equals 4 theory, I have a whole triplet of dual scalars to the gauge field, and I could have used any of those. And so so I have some p1 worth of these monopole operators, and that's telling me, so those guys live in the representation of the, I mean, so if I act on the t with the R symmetry, I will rotate it on this P1. Right, no, so the T sits in the same kind of representation as the Y. So, I mean, they're both in the 2, I mean, in this n equals 4 theory, they're sort of in a 2-1 representation of the SU2 cross SU2. Okay, so going back to this more general theory that I described to you, where I have NF minus 1 of the x's. So on the branch where the x's are set to 0, the chiral operators, which are functions on that, which correspond to functions on that branch, are of this form. And now these guys have dimension NF minus 1 over 2 plus 1/2, so NF over 2. So on, and this is exactly what you expect to see C2 mod ZNF. Right, this is the operator that looks like the basic variable to the NF power. Okay, on the other hand, I won't write the gauge invariant guys, but you're supposed to form gauge invariant combinations out of the X's, the X tildes. Oh, the T tilde, by the way, is the monopole operator with the charge where I have minus 1 unit of flux. But it's easy to see that actually has all of the same, I mean, it has the same conformal dimension and so on. So it sort of sits naturally in this multiplet with the T. Oh, with these T's? Yeah, sure. I mean, the complete chiral ring consists of all of these operators, but the OPs of these guys with those guys are all vanishing, which is what you expect for functions on a moduli space with two branches with just a dissected origin. In the U1 theory, let's say. Right, so I mean, we wrote in the paper the equation for the OPE between, say, T and T tilde. Sure. I mean, in this case, the OPE, so you know, of course, the OPE is related with Y's, but the OPA of TA and TA tilde is, in this case, given by this guy to the power NF. Yeah, that's true. I mean, they're not gauge invariant, so I can take the OPA of this guy with this guy, for instance, and then I will get one YY tilde from this combination and another YY tilde to the NF, in a sense, from the other guy. But I mean, it's just as good to talk about the T's as it is to talk about the Y's. I mean, the Y's are also not gauge invariant. So, of course, in the chiral ring, I always form gauge invariant combinations. That's right, exactly. I mean, not K, but NF. Okay. Right, so, I mean, of course, when you take the OPEs of these guys, it better be that it agrees with the dimensions, right? So if I take the OP of this with this, I won't have any monopoles left over. But I have to have some guy whose total dimension is an F. So it's going to end up being y, y tilde to be an app. Well, so if you try to form, I mean, the way you try to compute such an OPE, basically you take the cylinder diagram, right, and you put this configuration on one end and the other configuration on the other end. But in this case, those now, so now I'll have to have some varying, you know, fluxes. And it's just inconsistent to solve that. I mean, how can I express it? I mean, the different fluxes, and there's no way to put some other operator, I mean, there's no way to put in some other monopole operator that interpolates between them, because, I mean, it's very delicate to have this guy sitting in the Kao ring, right? You have to have, you want to make sure that you don't have to excite any of the matter fields which are charged under this guy. Otherwise, it will sit in some higher energy state. It won't be BPS. So it's very constrained what you can do. Okay, so we see now that we basically get the modulized space we expected for QED with NF flavors. So here I have these fields, all which charge one under the gauge group, and so there's one field, one of these, and NF minus one of those, and they all have dimension 1/2, and charge, well, these charge plus one, and these charge minus one. So if I form gauge invariant combinations, it looks exactly like the Cairo ring expected for T star of CP and F minus one. So here we get both the Higgs branch and the Coulomb branch from some quantum corrected sort of Higgs branch. Okay, so there's also some non-abelian generalization, which is rather complicated. So it would be easy to generalize this SL2Z transformation and the five brain moves I talked about when I, and that sort of worked when I had three or less flavors to the UN theory. But really, one's usually interested in the case where NF is bigger than 2NC. So as soon as you have U2, you probably want to take NF to be at least 4. And then this naive thing I was doing where I pulled those 1-1-5 brains to the left and right is no longer going to give me something without Yang-Mills terms. So that, okay, I could certainly write down that theory and it will be, it will flow in the infrared to the same theory as QED with NF flavors, so it's some generalization of mirror symmetry. But it doesn't give me this kind of nice Lagrangian description of the infrared fixed point. I mean, I should point out that one way to understand what I mean when I say I have a Lagrangian description of the infrared fixed point is if I took these levels to be not one but k, which of course won't be related to QED anymore, but it's a perfectly sensible theory, it still has n equals 4 supersymmetry, then for large k, the theory looks weakly coupled, and I could do perturbative expansions. Here, the sort of theory of that sequence, which is related to QED, is one where the coupling is one, but at least one isn't infinite, so you still have some reasonable expansion. But even in the case where you have more flavors, you can use some trick to still do this kind of thing. So I just put in some bogus NS5 brain out here. So in this configuration, I have, you know, the U2 gauge theory in three dimensions with n equals 4 supersymmetry and 4 hypers. So that's one of these configurations that people might be interested in. And again, I have this boundary here and here. And then I put in, imagine I just have another NS5 brain somewhere over here. So that does absolutely nothing to this configuration. But I can try to move these five brains to the right and pull them past this NS5. And I'll have some brain creation, and so I end up with a kind of complicated picture. So I pull one of them to the left, and one of them stays there, and I pull two of them to the right, one leaving it here and here. And so I end up with this long quiver. This is the U2 at level minus one, like that chopped off for some reason. So this looks like a very complicated theory, but at least it has the virtue of being, you know, I have a nice Lagrangian, the thing is conformally invariant. I don't have to flow through the infrared. I mean, this thing, it is the infrared fixed point of this. So it looks kind of like a mess, and there might be a lot of dual versions of this. So this whole SL2Z, maybe not all of it, will relate you to things that you can write down. Well, this is not exactly a simple theory, but you can write it down. Some of these transformations will lead you to things where don't really have a very nice three-dimensional description. You just call them, you know, 3 plus 1 Yang-Mills on an interval with some domain walls. But this guy has this nice feature of giving you a nice Lagrangian. So, okay, so some picture of that. I guess I'm basically done and out of time. So we looked here at quantum corrections to these moduli spacings of Chern-Simons matter theories directly and using the Kiowa ring, and it allowed us to identify this interesting CFT dual of, I mean, which has, so this is a CFT, but it's the same as the infrared limit of QED with flavors, and I could have also extended it to CD with flavors, but I would get more and more complicated CFT duals, I mean, CFT fixed ones. And I use more of the full SL2Z duality, and interestingly, you saw that in some cases, it reproduces the results of this piecewise abelian duality. So in U1 case, you have this more general kind of mirror symmetry where you, you know, just artificially break the free brain and dualize some pieces of it. So we could have used that trick to obtain these theories. That doesn't really work in the non-abelian theory. So there's this generalization, in a sense, that David discussed, which leads you to a lot of coupled Yang-Mills theories. But here, we can get some of that just by using this SL2Z transformations, more general than just the S-duality. And then you end up with Chern-Simons terms, but often those, in this case, are equivalent to these BF theories. A more general configuration with lots of fibrins won't turn into these BF types. So I guess that's it.